You're listening to All to Play For, brought to you by Joe and Coral.
Hello and welcome to All to Play For, brought to you by Joe and Coral, with me, Steve Sidwell, and of course, Joe Cole. Today we've got a special show because the Cheltenham buzz is a building and we have the perfect guest to straddle the worlds of both football and horse racing. Joining us today is a striker that scored 235 goals in a career playing for the likes of Portsmouth, Coventry and Newcastle, after retiring and becoming a horse trainer with over 200 wins spanning over 25 years. It's a special show. We needed a special guest, so we've got the mighty Mickey Quinn. Quinny, welcome to the show.
Good to see you.
Mickey.
How are you? Okay, you all right?
Yeah, fit and firing.
Good, a good trip down from Newmarket, I believe you come?
Yeah, Newmarket, Suffolk. Great till you get off the M11 and then it's a nightmare coming into London.
Yeah.
I remember from the radio days driving in, do 4 mile in about 3 hours. So I'm here in one piece anyway.
Good. Right, well, it's a Cheltenham special today. We're going to come on to the racing in a bit. But first of all, let's go back to the playing days. Started at Derby, moved to Wigan.
Hated Derby, by the way.
I know, yeah. Yeah, didn't start. It started at Derby.
Your baseball ground.
It started at Derby, didn't go too well. So you moved back home, didn't you? And you had spells at Wigan, Stockport, Oldham, scoring nearly 100 goals as well for them three.
Likes of Wigan, it was home from home because I decided by mutual consent to leave Derby. Couldn't settle down there. From a big family.
What was that mean?
Not in size, I mean, numerically.
Was you an apprentice there at the time? 16, 17?
Yeah, 16, 17. Right. And just couldn't settle.
Yeah.
So went back home. Dad gave me a good hiding.
Yeah.
Turned us back on. You'll turn your back on apprenticeship. I said, well, I wasn't enjoying it. So aside from Wigan, we had about 10 scousers in the squad there. And I've got to tell you a story. At the time, they wanted to go from the fourth division right to through the leagues, little Wigan. So they had a board of directors, Ken Bates.
Ken Bates?
Sir Bobby Charlton. And we had Freddie Pye, who was ex-Stockport County. So they put a few quid in, and they got Laddie Lloyd, who just finished playing as a player, sort of manager, and brought him in to get the team right the way through the divisions. It never quite worked out like that, but I was knocking in goals. New contract, 17, 18, 250 quid a week was made up.
Days.
Yeah, made up. And then I got a call from Freddie, who said, we were on the verge of promotion. Stockport County is old club. We're going to go out the Football League. Mm. And made me go to Stockport. I didn't want to go. And he said, get down there, score some goals.
Yeah.
And keep them in the division. Yeah. So I had no choice. I had to go down there. But I got 39 goals, 63 appearances. And first of my three golden boots.
Was goal scoring just always natural? Was you always a striker?
No, I played in midfield for the school. Like attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
And then the goal scoring, I played Sunday League football, my junior team, striker. Scored on you'd win 15-0, score 10 and that.
Yeah,
Then it was just a progression from the school to striker, apprentice and professional.
Yeah.
But I was just so single-minded.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to joke, I'd knock my granny over to score a goal, and I would, whether it's in training or whether it was, I just lived on goals.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't sleep in the summer, all summer, if I didn't get 20 league goals.
So. Well, I mean, proof's in the pudding there. I mean, the three clubs you just mentioned there, Wigan, Stockport, Oldham, nearly 100 goals, and then you get your move to Portsmouth, where you played the most games in your career at a single club.
Yeah.
And scoring goals as well. Did you feel like when you got that move to Portsmouth that straight away you settled there? Like you said there, you settled.
I was ready,
yeah.
You're right. I was ready because I played in the Northwest with them clubs, Oldham under Joe Royal. And it was all about survival, staying in the leagues. Portsmouth, a bit different. Alan Ball was manager. And he said, look, we need to score goals to get us out this division.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for three seasons they were the most consistent team in any league.
Mm.
They missed out on they were in the top two to the last week of each season, missed out by a point, missed out on goal difference. And then the third season, I was there, I think I got 28 goals. We got promoted.
Yeah.
Played up front with Paul Madden, remember Madden?
Yeah,
I loved all that.
England player, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was getting on a bit from Arsenal and that, but he'd hold the ball up and just give me a license to get in the box.
What was Alan Ball like? I met Alan Ball once, World Cup winner, like for the younger viewers, 1966. I met him once at a do. What a lovely man. What was he like to work for?
So passionate.
Yeah.
I mean, he was great in training. He'd still, he was crossing and shooting, and he'd cross one over, I'd knock one in. Joe Royal, 30th season I'd make him. And for England and all that. And he's so passionate and so enthusiastic. Mm. Sometimes over the top, you know, that it would boil over a bit.
Yeah.
But he put a team, your nickname was the Gremlins, because we had every vice under the sun in that team. I mean, he's probably a bit young to remember, but we had a midfield player called Mickey Kennedy.
Mm.
And my God, if you said mark him, you know, he was a good player, but... Bally, you know, Mark Glenn Hoddle, you know, when we were in the first division. Yeah. And he'd follow him to the toilet and everything, and you wouldn't give him a kick.
Yeah.
We had big Noel Blake. Billy Gilbert, Vince Allaire, right wing, Kevin O'Callaghan, left wing, me Matters, Kevin Dillon in midfield.
Yeah, he pulling the strings.
He
said he got sent off 12 times in his career. Yeah. Would that be right?
Yeah, probably all of Portsmouth as well. I'm telling you. But I'll never forgive him the promotion season. He got 14 penalties in one season.
Yeah.
Vince and Callie used to get penalties all the time. And I used to take the odd penalty and it stopped me getting over 30 goals with him taking the penalties.
When you was at Portsmouth, you obviously met Mick Shannon that you...
Yeah, Mick was coming to the end of the career.
A bit of a racing mentor, I suppose, for you there. Did you feel like at the time, along the lines of football and racing, that was the start of a friendship, or did that come later in?
I was into racing anyway, on the punting front.
Yeah. Yeah.
And going back to my Liverpool days as a kid, I was lucky enough to grow up 70s when Red Rum was winning. So my dad took me to Grand National.
Yeah.
I had the bug. Yeah. I remember sitting down watching the old ITV7 with him on the telly.
Yeah.
And picking horses, and he'd had a bet, and mine were beating his, so he barred me from watching that on the telly. So on the punting front, it was that. And then I made my debut against Palace. Sellers Park, Mick was in the team that day, and he was coming to the end of his career going into the racing, and he said, when I pack in, would you get a horse with me? So I owned an half share in a horse called Lanson, which was his first 2-year-old winner.
Yeah.
So, and then that was the bug then. Started owning around about 87, owning horses.
I remember speaking to Michael Owens, big horse man, and when we was with England, he constantly had the racing post, to training, bang, racing post, and he'd be doing his thing. And I remember speaking to him, and he said he got as much as a buzz about one of his horses winning as he did scoring a goal. Do you agree with that? Or
I think, well, he was owning horses, Michael. Yeah. I mean, he didn't get up in the morning and start shoveling horse shite. You know what I mean? And I'd done the lot, drove the lorry. Yeah. So I think it's more fulfilling for me in that sense.
Yeah.
Training a winner.
Yeah.
Because of all the factors of running a business and mucking out and, you know,
real
hands-on.
Yeah.
And beating... Your horse is beating other trainers now. Yeah. I loved all that.
Did you feel like when you were doing that, you feel like the lower league team going, like say you're going against one of
definitely,
the big hitters.
Definitely.
If your horse went and done one of them, it was like going to like Anfield or Old Trafford and beating one of the big
Exactly,
guys. Yeah?
Exactly. And, you know, they have an embarrassment of riches, 400 horses, some of these big trainers. You have 20, and in that 20 each season, you've got to take them on and try and beat them. And that gave you more satisfaction when you did beat them, you know.
You mentioned there about your debut at Portsmouth. Am I right in saying that there was a bit of an altercation with John Fashanu? In terms of a spell that happened, two games in 4 days?
I think it was my home debut. We played, Fashanu's playing for Millwall.
Yeah.
And I scored on my home debut, 2-1. They had a corner last minute of the game. So Kevin Dillon, former teammate,
he was
marking Fash. So the corner came over and Fash went bang. Oh my God. He put him on the deck. He didn't get up at the counter 10. Carried off to hospital. I think he had a broken jaw, nose, the lot. Yeah. And in them days, that was on Tuesday night. Fash signed for Wimbledon on a Thursday.
Yeah.
Registration went through. Who have we got at Fratton Park? I was going to say Jurassic Park.
I bet it felt like Jurassic Park.
At Fratton Park on the Saturday, Wimbledon at home.
Oh, wow.
So for 48 hours, and we had an Andy team, the lads were filing the studs, chalking their elbows. He's going to get it.
Yeah.
And I never forget, 10 seconds past 3 o'clock kickoff, Mickey Kennedy, two-footed tackle fash around the neck.
Straight away.
Oh, rootless. Wow. Well, fair to fash. Yeah. He was hard, you know.
Yeah. And, yeah.
He just dusted himself off, got on with the game. Well, you both played Fratton Park, so you come off the pitch, yeah. You go down the stairs, yeah. Through the tunnel. Mm. Ball draw, I think it was 0-0 or 1-1, something like that. And as we're coming off the pitch, Fash is in front of me. And Billy Gilby, teammate of mine, is in front of Fash. So as we're coming off the pitch, I see Billy go down. And I thought, hey, the Fash is giving me a dig. So I jumped on Fash's back, give him a lift up. 22-man brawl in the tunnel.
And that at Fratton Park as well.
In the tunnel, yeah. Ooh, at Fratton Park.
Yeah.
So as we get back into the changes, there's the gaffer, Bawley, sitting on the treatment table, tweed flat cap, yeah, pulled down, his legs dangling. I can't do the voice, but who the FNL started that,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, I had to say, gaffer, it was me. I said, as we're coming off the pitch, Fash it, Billy. I'm sticking, yeah, up for my teammates. I had Fash it all, yeah, picked off.
Yeah.
Billy Gilbert said, what do you mean? I slipped on the stairs coming off the pitch. Billy slipped on the stairs coming off the pitch. I got fined 2 weeks' wages, and it was in the paper the next day. Pompey crimes.
Wow.
Police involved in everything.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's really two big, yeah, outfits going at it. I mean, that, yeah, tunnel there, you could, yeah, do, yeah, well, yeah, if you're 22 people in that.
Well, I've seen Fash since, like, and we laughed about it, but...
That's probably... I mean, we sort of transverse both eras, but football now, when you think about some of the tackles that go in, it's chalk and cheese, ain't it?
Yeah.
From where your day, even our day, it's,
I mean, we had cameras and, yeah, playing, but, yeah, you could get away with a little bit more, couldn't, yeah, you? And just some ruthless. But, yeah, and there was lots of grudges in them, yeah, days, you know, yeah, you wait for them to come back. I mean, especially Pompey, for some reason, we had loads of rows in Millwall and Southampton as well. Yeah. But, look, good fun as well.
Yeah.
Kept to that edge.
Like, even just speaking today, you can see the buzz with you just speaking about Portsmouth. But so then the transfer comes with Newcastle, and you're in a bit of a tug of war of a transfer to Newcastle or stay at Portsmouth.
Yeah, the thing with Portsmouth, everything had changed. Bawley got the sack. John Gregory came in.
Yeah.
And Jim Gregory, do you remember the old Queen's Park,
yeah,
Rangers,
yes,
chairman?
Yeah.
But he was skint. So I was club captain by then. And they offered me like £5 a week, new contract. I was, yeah, coming towards the end of my contract because they wanted to sell me, but didn't, right, want to say to the fans, we want them out,
yeah,
to get some dough. So Jim Smith rang me up, Newcastle. So Jim said, we need a centre forward. Okay. How much you got to spend, Jim? He said, 350 grand. I said, I'm going to go for more than that. I've been needing goal scorer.
Yeah.
Two golden boots under me arm so far.
Yeah.
I said, and these won 1.5 million.
Yeah.
Portsmouth probably won 1.5 million.
What year was
it? About 50 million quid these days, you know. So, old money. So what happens is, Jim said, okay, we put a bid in. So he put a bid in of 100 grand.
Wow.
And they said, we want 1.5 million. Goes to tribunal.
Yeah.
Come out the tribunal. Made me mad, I don't want to go to Newcastle. 700 grand.
Okay.
680 or 690 grand.
For Newcastle got a
which
right.
Jim Smith, yeah, gave me his phone and said, you ring the chairman, I'm not. I'm like the chairman. McKeegan was it? I said, Mr. Chairman, he said, yeah, you know, I'm Bonnie lad. He was a Geordie.
Yeah.
He said, how much you sign you for? I said, nearly 700 grand, Mr. Chairman. He said, you better be bloody good.
In that tone of voice as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I knew it was a massive club. They'd just been relegated, so they were in the Championship, Division 2 then. But when I went up there, the club was in chaos. They had a group of supporters called Supporters for Change. They wanted the directors out. They were the fans were burning shirts on the pitch the season before when they were relegated.
Wow.
Not much changed, has it?
Yeah. We joined this world a couple of months ago.
Yeah, yeah, well, there's always been in some sort of turmoil.
Was Gazza there at that time, or had he gone to...
No, Gazza had gone, but... Gazza used to come up and watch us midweek, and we used to have a few nights out, which were legendary, really.
Yeah.
But
Glenn Roder there?
No, Glenn wasn't. No, the club was pretty much in transition then.
Was it?
Kevin Dillon was there from Portsmouth. Yeah. He instrumental in me going up there. And I played up front with Mark McGee.
Well, I got to tell you old story. Millwall manager Mark McGee.
Got to tell you the story about when I spoke to Jim Smith. He said, what shirt do you want to wear? I said, there's only one shirt you wear up here, gaffer.
Yeah.
Number 9.
Yeah.
you know, Jackie Milburn, Hughie Gallagher, legends, and Malcolm McDonald. And he said, well, just one thing. I said, what's that? He said, no one wants to wear it. He said, why? He said, no striker scored 20 league goals for 25 years since Malcolm McDonald.
Wow.
I said, nah, I'll wear it, no problem.
Yeah.
So, first game, we played Leeds, and Leeds had spent 8-9 million quid on players, which again was a lot of money for a championship team.
Yeah.
Gordon Strachan, young David Batty, good team. Gary McAllister,
good team.
Good team. And anyway, we were 2-1 down. I got a penalty. The Gallagate end, you know, the cop end there, Newcastle.
Yeah.
Number 9 on. I thought, go on then. Past Mervyn Day, and it scored on me debut. Oh, and then the relief was gone, you know, and the belief come, and then got another 3 second half, got 4 on my Newcastle United debut with the number 9 on. In that season, I got 39 goals with the number 9 on, and the third in the Golden Boots.
Third?
Yeah.
Who got more than that?
I don't know, but these are leading league scorer.
Ah,
I got one Stockport in the league. You know, you're in the Adidas Golden Boots and Portsmouth when we got promoted, and then Newcastle.
So 4 on your debut, home debut.
Yeah.
What was the night out like after that?
Oh,
I bet it was lovely.
Can you swear on this?
Say what you want.
So, I had my dad up, my uncles. Yeah. So we were staying in the Holiday Inn at the time. So anyway, didn't buy a drink that night, you know.
Yeah.
Go back to the hotel, and the bar's 2 floors up from the reception. So 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm full of people at the bar. So I was dying for a wee. So there's 3 lifts, and 2 of them weren't working because it was past midnight. There was only 1, so I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. Oh, busting. And then someone conveniently put a pot plant there. So I thought, I've got to have a wee, I've got to wet myself. So as I gone like that, the hotel manager came over, 6'4", ex-copper, Geordie, and he went, Mickey, man, you score another 4 next week, you can have a shit in that. Anywhere else, locked up. Anywhere else, Newcastle, yeah, go on. And that's the way it was. You know, it just hand in glove with the club, the fans, everything, and still to this day, you treat it as though you're still playing when you go up there.
They
love you, you know.
Yeah.
So then we go on again there, the passion that you speak about Newcastle, then the move now to Coventry. Was that...
Well, it broke my heart really leaving Newcastle.
Was it?
I had no choice.
What was the reason?
Kevin Keegan came as manager, and I was injured. He never really seen the best of me, and just when I was getting fully fit, I was like playing in League Cup games, scoring goals, next game dropped, getting in through an injury. I scored a winning goal in that game, next game dropped, and he did it 3 or 4 times, and I thought he's taking the mick, you know, so literally. And so I went to Coventry.
Yeah,
I had no choice. I was 31 by then, something like that. So
I mean, you hit the ground running. It says you got 17 goals in 26 games, and then the trip to Highbury.
Well, every time I seen that ball, I've seen Keegan's face on it, I thought, get in there, because he you know, I wanted to prove him wrong. Got back to the big league again, this new Premier League, and I think still got some Premier League records from my debut. I scored my first 6 Premier League games. Aguero got to 5 and Costa got to 5, and then quickest player to 10 Premier League goals from his debut. And again, same 2 players, Aguero got to 9 and Costa got to 9.
That's some company, isn't it?
See if you can get them on the podcast next week.
They're a bit expensive, Mick.
I mean, we've got to talk about the trip to Highbury, because back then it was a special place to go. You know, it was the Arsenal. It was, you know, as you said, the stadium, the North Bank was going up there, and bits and bobs. And you get a hat trick.
That sticks in my mind.
Yeah.
When we booked you on that, you know, like all players, you ever like, I remember the hat trick.
Well, strikers in the league had scored a hat-trick at Highbury for 75 years prior to that. And then I got it, and no one did it since, because they knocked the ground down.
I was going to say, brilliant.
But again, a funny story going into that. 2 weeks prior to the kickoff, big kickoff, it was the new Carling Premier League. So we knew we got Arsenal. Sky were involved, home of the goal celebration. So I took the lads on a bonding session to some country club outside of Coventry. Anyway, this 80s disco or something. this song come on called The Funky Chicken. So we were all that drunk on the night. We said, whoever scores at Highbury, first game, we'll do The Funky Chicken. So we're playing up front with Peter Unlove and Roy Wegley.
Yeah.
And Little Nuddy, first 20 minutes, goes through. Tony Adams brings him down the clock end, and we got a penalty.
Yeah.
So scored the penalty. So Stars are doing the old Funky Chicken each goal.
I remember
so
it, yeah.
They must have thought, I think it got voted the worst goal celebration that season. I didn't give a monkey's though. Second half, Roy went down the right wing. I was sort of tracking him, and he backheeled it, edge of the box. And a great finish, side footed, but left foot, but guided it right into the top right hand corner.
Lovely finish,
And then the next one, I just cut inside and just hit it as hard as I could, and Seaman got a hand to it and went in the top corner again. But I remember Wrighty coming up and said, great finishes and that. I said, if you've got a couple of hours, I'll talk you all through my goals.
You'd have loved
it,
right?
No, I loved it. He loved it. To be fair, Wrighty, I remember asking me for advice on a new contract at Palace, you know, the PFA dues and stuff like that, because obviously a bit older than him, and he didn't do too bad, did he?
There was a big hype around Wrighty at that time, wasn't there, as well? So you come in and...
Nah, he's a top player.
And banging electric.
And I remember afterwards, you had a little Irish kid, John Sheridan.
Yeah.
He's only 18 in Dublin. He was on the bench. And Wrighty had a hit single out that day called Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
So Shez wrote on, Quinny did the right thing and put it under their dressing room door right after the game. And in fact, George Graham went ballistic. I think he dragged Merce off at half time as well.
Did he?
He thought Merce had been out the night before.
That year, you went to Coventry. Yeah. You had a bet on yourself to score 30 goals.
Yeah.
That season. Yeah. I mean, that just shows the confidence that you've got in yourself as a...
I mean, I'd flirted with the big league once before with Pompey, but we got relegated the same. The chairman sold all the players, so we got relegated the same season, you know, after we got promoted.
What was the big difference there when the Premier League was just started out compared to the old First Division? Was there, obviously, we remember there was a big hype around it, but playing it, did it feel like, wow, this is
the start of something big?
Really?
That's what it felt like. At the time, I think we had 75% British players, 25% foreign players.
But that would have included Irish and Scottish or not?
No.
British,
so you put the spin on it now, it's completely the other way. 75% foreign players, 25% British players. So, the start of something big, and then the money sort of late 90s was ploughed in there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And the lads, the pros were getting the benefit of it then.
Yeah.
So, sadly, I just missed out.
Man United dominated the Premier League early years and throughout. Would it be fair to say Gary Pallister would think you're a bit of a wind-up?
Well, funny enough, he's driving on the way down, so he used to have a row with all the time. I said, Gary Pallister, for some reason, and not my fault.
Yeah.
So every time we come out on a pitch, this goes back to Newcastle, because he was at Middlesbrough.
Wow,
right.
So the derby's then. So come on a pitch, I mean, you're going to behave yourself today, or what? Shut up, straight away. So next minute, I said, just get on with the game and just let's, you know.
Yeah.
Next minute, wash, yellow card, blah, blah, blah. And then I thought, okay, the gloves are off. I'll have to give him some stick, give him an elbow. And, and I just carried on. And every time we come out on the pitch, you're going to get on with the game today. For some reason, it didn't like me very much. And that went to Manchester United when I was at Coventry in the Premier League. I got sent off once against Manchester United, but not with Gary, Schmeichel. Little Peter Unlove again got brought down, and he come goose-stepping out to Schmeichel, and I get back in the goal, and he went down holding his face.
Really?
And I was, would you believe, the first player to get a red card rescinded on the Monday.
Really?
Wow.
I said, but it doesn't take away the embarrassment of 28,000 United fans when you're trudging off thinking you've had scouts. So for some reason, I don't know why, but I never rekindled a fire. No. It just didn't like me.
Was there anyone that wound you up at all that you would look forward to? I mean, you said that about Pally, but was there anyone that you look forward to playing against, or you think, or the opposite side, sorry, coming up against someone going, oh, he's going to give me a bit of stick today?
Not really. No, I wasn't in fear of anyone. Or we had hard games, and most of them, but the hardest mentally played against was the old Liverpool team playing for my God. Cool. Alan Hansen, Lawrenson.
Yeah.
I mean, before I thought about closing them down, they were three passes ahead of you.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could never get near them. Honest, the footballing brains they had, they were brilliant. And so I had to try and mix it up, you know, because you couldn't get near them by upsetting them or
was that
trotting
the best,
on the feet at set
best
pieces
team?
And stuff.
Was that the best team you played against? That you talked to a lot of people of that era, they said that team was just unreal.
Who else were playing at the time? Beardsley. Some team.
Frightening. We retire in February 96 after a spell in Greece. Given your love for racing, you met Mick Shannon again. Did it help?
He mentored me, Mick.
Did it help with the transition finishing football, knowing that you was going to go into, or did you not know that you was going to go into?
No, it was something I was planning for a couple of years because obviously Mick went into the training.
Yeah.
I was owning horses, I had syndicates and all that. Yeah. So, and I put everything into the football. Mm. I'd give everything, didn't leave anything out. And it was just something I was looking forward to. Didn't really have any aspirations to be a manager, although I did when I came back from Greece, went for the Burnley job. Playing manager there, didn't get it. So I thought, well, I'll move on. Because you needed to get that 4-5 years experience under your belt before the jockey club give you a licence.
Right.
And prove to them you can run a business, so on and so on. So I had to make a quick decision. And that was it, really, to get involved straight away. Yeah. And Mick took me under his wing and mentored me.
Why do you think there's such an overlap with footballers and racing? I know it was more of a culture thing back, obviously, when you was playing, but we see it now, the likes of Michael Owen's got a stable, Glenn Johnson is doing really well, Griezmann, I think, is growing a yard as well. So why do you think it is footballers and horse racing goes hand in hand?
It was the culture where, in the dressing room, as you know, you had in them days, you had the drinkers, you had the lads who played golf, the racing lads who go racing together, and it was just, to me, it was meeting different people on a social circle, you know, it was getting away from the football for an entertaining day out.
Yeah.
The excitement of, you know, thoroughbreds sprinting 40 miles an hour. The excitement of winning a few quid, you know, having a great day, social day, coming away with a few quid from the racing. That was all about to me. It was an out away from the football, from the norm.
Yeah. What will you and won't you miss about training horses? Not mucking up shit, I suppose. One of
it is like Groundhog Day every day because you go in, feed the horses 5 o'clock in the morning, then you'd muck them out, then you'd did exercise, then you'd have 3-4 hours in the afternoon if you weren't racing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then you're in evening stables, you're grooming them, so on and so on. For 25 years doing that, like you're institutionalised in a bit. I'll miss the interaction with the horses, beautiful animals. They are, and
they're calming, isn't
they? You get to know every little vice that they have, and they're like your kids.
Yeah.
You know, some of them naughty, some of them are great, you know what I mean? And I'm managing them, and you know where you've got them, and to pick that race and for it to fall into place and win, I'll miss all that.
Yeah.
But I won't miss getting up 5 o'clock in the morning, I've stepped away from it. I used to say I won't get back in it. I don't know. I mean, the new racing league starting. It started last year and it's kicking in again 6 Thursdays in August onwards. I've been captain of the North team and that. So nice to get back in, bit of interaction and jockeys and.
Is that the plan for the future? I mean, a 25-year stint is a long time. You come out and you're thinking, no, I want to get back in.
Again, I give everything to the football and I'm not like one of them boxers that. Oh, yeah, I've got to play football all the time. Yeah. I hardly ever kicked the ball since I retired because I knew I'd put everything into that.
Yeah.
And then with the racing, I put everything into that. I'm thinking, you know, should I go back or what? I don't know. All of a sudden, for the first time in my life, because you always had a game to look forward to with the football, a race to look forward with the horses, planning ahead, and it's all mapped out. And all of a sudden, there's nothing mapped out for me at the moment. Yeah. Starts to get in the media again and stuff like that and do a bit of after-dinner speaking and that's nice going around the country sharing the stories which I'm sharing with you today.
I've been fascinated. Is there some similarities in football and racing? So when you're a footballer, and we've all been there, you're in that purple patch as a striker, you're scoring goals and you know you're going to go into games and score. Do you get that in racing as well in terms of the horses are they're at the top, and you're thinking you're going to go into most races going, we've got a great chance today, a great chance.
Yeah, yeah, it happens very rarely over the year. You know, you'll have probably four or five races where you know that's exactly the race for that horse, the ground, the draw, the jockey, the trip. But then it's the only sport where it's out of your hands, because you can do something in football. Yeah. You can make a goal, score a goal, you know, save a goal. But in racing, it's out of your hands once the jockey gets on.
Yeah.
It's down to human error then.
Yeah.
So, but when it all pieces together,
yeah,
it's fantastic. But like I say, four or five times a year, that would happen where everything fell into place.
Right.
And have a few quid on.
I remember my horse.
What was its name?
Poppenham. It was like, it was my granddad who got me into horse racing. Yeah. And so I called it Poppenham. I didn't want to leave my nan out. So I put Poppenham anyway. Right. So anyway, I loved it. But he was the most... Simon said he was the most relaxed horse ever. Like, I went to see him before the race, and you know, like, sometimes they can get a bit, the horses can get a bit unsettled in the back of the van, whatever it is, and then they get there and he would just go to sleep. He was just like, he was the Eden Hazard of horses. I go and see him before a race. We're like, oh, an hour before a kickoff or whatever, it'd be a kip, and he'd be like, I'm like, is he all right? I'm going something. Is he all right or what?
They're the best throughout, Joe, because they conserve their energy for the race.
He was...
So, where, you know, get a hyper horse, you know, they might sweat before the race, and the energy, they're losing energy. But, I mean, a temperament like that
is
fantastic in a racehorse. Yeah. But, like, on a day-to-day basis, you know, it's like Russian roulette when you're working with them.
Yeah.
Being bitten, I've had... You know, numerous horses stand on your toe.
Bitten? Horses bite, do they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The hyper, I mean, especially when...
You're not seeing horses' teeth.
Yeah, no, railings.
I mean, it's not... it's not like...
They kick you.
It's not like Jaws the movies. But what I'm saying, when you know, some of them irritated when you're brushing them, then they have a little pop at you. And I tell you what,
you don't know it's coming.
No, it's sharp. Oh. Sharp, the hyper. I mean, you're feeding them 15 pounds in weight of food a day.
Wow.
You know, for the condition and they're athletes. And of course, you come into their space, some of them get out, you know, don't want you in, pretend to kick you. You know, it's just their way. Like I say, every horse is, and you've got a nice horse like that, they're like pets. But they're not all like that.
Amazing. Right, what really happened? So we're going to go back to a moment in your career. We want to know more about it. We've touched on it a little bit beforehand, but it's the move from Newcastle to Coventry. You said there it broke your heart. When did you find out that the deal was on the table to go?
About the fourth time I went into Kevin Keegan's office like that, on the door, I said, Kevin, I said, that's four times you dropped me. I've been in the team four times, scored the winning goals four times. I don't want to come and go on. He said, you're going. Just been on the phone to Bobby Gould, Coventry manager.
Yeah.
And within an hour, I was down the M1 to Coventry. Never had time to say goodbye to the fans. Never had time to say goodbye to my teammates. And I'd been there 3 1/4 years and loved it up there.
Did that leave a bit of taste?
It did. That's what I'm saying. So it fired me up, really, to prove him Kevin wrong. And I know Kevin's seen him afterwards, knew him before, through Mick Shannon, Alan Ball.
Mm.
Got on well with him. But it's different when he becomes your boss.
Mm.
He was my idol as a kid. You know, growing up in Liverpool in the 70s.
Yeah. So was there a reason around it? Did they want you out to get money in, or did they earmark someone else to come in and take your place?
A bit of that. He'd come in, he struggled to start with. We just about stayed up previous season. And then he wanted to bring in his own players. And, you know, I had a few words with him about something, and he obviously didn't take... didn't argue with him, but we were speaking about the team and where it was going and stuff like that. And with Kevin's first job, he didn't like confrontation. Not aggressive conversation, just talking.
Conversation.
Yeah, he wanted to do everything, you know, make all the decisions. Didn't really get... And yet he brought experienced players into the squad eventually, who he bounced off and who he talked to.
Yeah.
And look, he went on to build one of the best teams in the Premier League that never won anything, really.
Yeah.
The Entertainers, you know, they were a fantastic team. I really enjoyed watching it. But to me, the way I thought he could have handled it a bit better, the move, you know, and in the end, I thought, well, it's to this new Premier League, you know, and it's a ticket to the big league again.
Yeah.
And I was going to take it.
And going back to St James Park with Coventry, it must have been nice to say a goodbye there to the fans. You must have got a good reception.
Yeah, I always do. Yeah, I mean, when the first one, obviously, I was working for Sky at the time, so he was singing Who Ate All the Pies. We were in a we were in a porter cabin because you're building the big main stand. Yeah. You've got to come out the porter cabin to go to the toilet through the fans. So they're all, Who Ate All the Pies, laughing and joking. And they started walking through, they go, Who Ate All the Pies? You all went quiet. I went to the toilet. And then I went to the thing and I bought 25 pies on a tray, brought them back and handed them out. But we had a laugh, and I always do, and it, like I say, it's more now when I go back.
Yeah.
I can't set foot off the train onto the platform and someone's asking you for a selfie or an autograph. It's mad.
Yeah. They're so that's passionate amazing. Up there, isn't they?
But over 30 years ago, you know, when I played for them, but yet they never forget you.
I think current players, you don't realise the effect you have when you're playing and doing it, and then you go back to a club that you've done well at, and then you get all the, you know, people. Yeah. It's nice, isn't it? But I don't think the current players, you don't take it in while you're playing. That, like Mickey said, 30 years after he's left Newcastle, they still love him. Yeah. He goes back there, and I think for younger players playing now, they should really recognise that what they're doing now is affecting the fans.
Yeah.
If you do a job at a club, they'll love you forever, won't
they? Yeah, yeah.
So, what's your relationship now like with Kev Keane? Like you see him out and about.
I've seen him a couple. I don't see him all the time, but I've met him since we left. And we're fine.
All fine. Good. Good.
Kevin's on the after dinner circuit as well.
Yeah.
So I'm sure I'll bump into him somewhere along the line. Okay. But you don't realise at the time when he becomes your boss.
Yeah.
A lot of people, even in normal jobs, don't see eye to eye with their boss. But you've got to get on with it. And you've got to work through it. And in football, when new managers come in, they wanted to bring their own players in.
Yeah.
And he brought some cracking players in. I think Gavin Peacock came and Ned Kelly, David Kelly.
Yeah.
At times I was playing with them, you know, three up front. Lee Clark was in midfield. Yeah. Clark is
a good player.
Top player.
Yeah. But played against him.
Ozzy was manager before Kevin. And I will say for Ozzy, when he come in, he introduced the young lads. So, you know, you had the United, them classic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He brought in the likes of Lee Clark, Steve Howie, Robbie Elliott. Yeah. Steve Watson into that team, and they were ready to play, but they were a little bit naive, you know, and we were losing games, and he was only there 3 months, Ozzy, and he got the sack, and then they panicked, and then they brought Kevin in after that. So but again, I learned a lot of Ozzy, you know, the training side of it, passing, the move, the one touch football. He was the best player in the five sides, Ozzy. He was brilliant. And Tony Galvin was his assistant. So played under a lot of decent coaches and managers, and probably learned something off everyone.
Yeah. Well, look, let's stay on Newcastle. Let's do some current Premier League chat. Newcastle didn't get the result yesterday against Chelsea. VAR and bits.
Robbed.
It was terrible. There's a lot of spotlight, you know, on the club at the moment in terms of Newcastle with the takeover, the new manager, signings that have come in. You've got to say that Eddie Howe and the players, where it's affected them at the start, but at the moment, they're going well, huh?
Obviously, with the new consortium coming in, which was a breath of fresh air for the fans, because for 14 years the club had stagnated. There was no ambition at the club under the previous under the previous ownership. All he wanted to do was stay in the Premier League, get the dough, not interested in cup competitions, no ambition.
You
can't go on like that. And you know, I went up there, I did a game, a few executive boxes, and it's like a cloud since Ashley gone. I went into the club, the results weren't going their way, but you know, Eddie had come and he's experience, but you could see the smile back on the fans' faces, actually looking forward to going to a game, looking forward to the future, to say, you know, the owners came out and said, we want to win something in the next 5 years, which is unheard of for the last 14. So it's like a breath of fresh air. The club's vibrant again, and the results have shown that. And you know, there was again a bit of the January window, and you spend the money, and you know, they're just spending it for the sake of it. But signings have worked out. Well.
We've been singing Eddie Howe's praises on this podcast. Yeah. We asked the question when he come in, and there was a lot of people in football going, Eddie Howe, like, and I was like, no, I don't know Eddie personally, but I've watched his career and that. I think he's different class. The way his Bournemouth team played, and for people to criticise him for Bournemouth getting relegated, he took Bournemouth down. But by the way, he took them from League Two to the Premier League. Yeah. Kept him up, played some outstanding football. I think he fell down a little bit when he got a bit of money to spend at Bournemouth. Since we talked about this, he didn't get the signings quite right, hence the reason they went down. So when he went to Newcastle, I thought it was a brilliant appointment. He knows the Premier League. He's a coach. Like, he gets the best out of players, doesn't he? You see him, and I think he's been outstanding. Like, I shouted it when he took the job. There's no way they'll go down now. I think Dan Burn's been unbelievable. What a signing that is. And he's a Geordie as well. So he's straight away, he's got that connection with the fans, which has been missing. going up to do the broadcasts over the last few years at Newcastle, coming from Danny, you don't realise how disliked Mike Ashley and his era was. Like, yeah. The fans weren't buying; they were refusing to buy their pints in the stadium, and they wouldn't buy nothing from. Unbelievable.
I mean, when you think he tried to change the name of the ground
taking Shearer's statue down, like that's just a PR nightmare, isn't it?
Very disrespectful. I mean, the one thing, because they haven't won anything, they latch onto is the history and the fantastic players they've had there, like Alan, you know, and move a statue, and they changed the name of the bar as well. Look, he had to go, and he got his money, so he's happy, and the fans have got their club back.
Well, you say the fans, and it's exciting time for fans to be at Newcastle now. How far can Eddie take this? I say team. They're talking ambitions for Premier League. Is that something that really can be achievable?
Yeah. Joe mentioned about Eddie. This is my only doubt, is that his team with Bournemouth, all he had to do was what Ashley wanted to do with Newcastle, keep them in. But we know Eddie's ambitious, and it's an experience for him to build a team, to go out and win things now, and get into Europa League spot or Champions League spot in the next 2 or 3 years. So I've no doubt in my mind, you know, and what I've seen and how he's revitalised players who I thought were no better than Championship players, who are on that verge of Championship.
I agree.
Shelby and Ryan Fraser. Who else? Matt Ritchie. And Joe Linton.
£40 million
quid. I scored more goals than being retired 30 years.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, you know, under Eddie, Joe Linton's like one of the best Premier League midfielders in current form.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I know.
How he's done that. And that gives me more to go on for the future to think he can build a team. And they're only going to get better players because they've got the dough to buy some.
I agree. I just think, you know, for the one thing from the history, from the start of football, the team with the most money or with the money buys the best players and they win trophies. And it's right the way through. From the great Liverpool side, they bought the best players, didn't they? Manchester United, they bought the best players. Our Chelsea team, we bought the best players. You win things. And I think Newcastle now can compete financially. The only question would be, will Eddie be able to... Because it's not going to be like that. They're not going to stay up from relegation, then go Europa League, then go Champions League, then win. And you know, in this game, you can have six bad weeks and you're out the door. Mm. And at every match... Now, if Eddie keeps Newcastle up, all them names that they got linked with in the summer, you've just gone past, your Contes, your Allegri's, I don't know who else, Enrique, all these managers, big names are out of jobs. Now, all of a sudden, they're going, well, I quite fancy that now, because it's black cap.
But do you remember, Joe, when Stevie Bruce left?
Yeah.
And some of the managers that were being linked, and some of them didn't fancy it.
Exactly.
Because the position they were in, and fair play to Eddie, he's waited for a big club to come in, because he's had other job offers.
Yeah.
And he'd won one game.
Yeah,
had they won a game when he took over?
I think it was... Most people had written him off. It was in December, wasn't it? And he got a tune out of the players even before he got the new players in, and now they've gone up another level.
Premier League Manager of the Month in the last month.
Well, they're certainly doing well. Let's go to the top end of the table. Top four race. West Ham, Arsenal, Man United all picking up 3 points. Yeah. How do you see that one shaping out? Top four. I mean,
this is the Arsenal.
Arsenal are favourite, aren't they? I mean, with the games in hand, although they played Liverpool, don't they, coming up? So... Not going to win that, are they? But they've got to be favourites. It's in their hands now. They've got the game in hand. The fourth, beat Leicester.
A lot of credit's got to go to Arteta at the moment. He's done really well. A
few people scratching their head about him earlier in the season, weren't they? When he had injuries and he went on a run of defeats. But I think he's getting there now. And I like the policy of the younger players.
Yeah.
I know my team's Liverpool. And I remember when Brendan was there. Was that they couldn't really buy top class players. They didn't have the budget to buy top class players.
Yeah.
So they had to bring in a few younger players and, you know, wheel and deal in the market and that. And I think that's where Arsenal are at the moment. So if they can stay in that Champions League, give them, you know, base to get money.
I don't think their business model would have been... They didn't think they could get Champions League football this year. I think they got to December and they thought, this is going better than we thought. So, and probably speed up the process of a couple of years. If they get Champions League football, they'll have a little bit more money to spend and they'll go again. I think he's done a great job, Arteta. And Harry still looks like a movie star. It's unbelievable. He looked unreal.
I think he dies his hair.
I'm sitting there with the missus and yesterday, and I'm going, we're looking at it for a good couple of minutes. We're debating, is that it looks too, he can't die because it looks too perfect. He looks unreal.
He's looking good, eh?
Yeah, he's looking good.
I just want to touch on Liverpool very, very quickly. Massive Liverpool fan. They've got a chance.
I think they have.
They've got a real chance.
I think this is going to turn out to be a grueling season for both City and Liverpool. Liverpool won the League Cup, still in, you know, FA Cup, Champions League. Yeah. No one's ever done it, have they? So, but what I'm saying, grueling in.
Yeah.
They've got to grind out results and 20 minutes against Brighton.
Yeah.
They were outplayed.
Yeah.
And then they got the class, got that goal, Diaz and that. I think they're going to push City all the way. Whether they do it, I still don't know, whether it might run out of gas, but they're going to push him all the way, right to the wire.
Yep.
And the best compliment is Pep saying he does my head in Klopp in Liverpool, because they're hovering all the time. And I judge players and football teams on, if I was a punter and I'd go to pay to watch, and under Pep Guardiola's teams, under Klopp's teams, I'd go and pay gladly to watch them teams play.
You know, I agree, Mick.
On the teams.
I agree, Sid. I think it's two outstanding teams. I can't see either of them winning all of it, but they're going to push each other. The two Champions League winners are going to come from Liverpool and Man City. We've done all the Champions Leagues at BT, and they're the two best teams by a mile, Liverpool and Man City.
Chelsea just underneath them. Do you reckon they've got a chance of falling into fourth place?
There's a lot going on in the club at the moment.
I think Tuchel's doing an amazing job, but it's got to be affecting the players in some capacity.
Well, keep winning, though, don't they?
Keep winning games, and that's down to Thomas Tuchel, Mick. Honestly, I've been over there. I'm going in there tomorrow to interview someone for the game, and every time I go down there, when you walk into a football club, we've all played, you know when a manager's got it. But I walk into some football clubs, I'm like, oh, this don't feel good or something, but he's brilliant with me. He comes out, he'll have a chat, you know. He's just open. I thought he's handled this whole process fantastically, but it's unsettling for the players, of course. But I don't think they'll fall off it. I think they'll finish third, but it's going to be difficult for the Champions League now with all of the distractions. Like I said, I think they're just a little bit short. They're a great side, like I said, champions of Europe, but they're just a little bit short of Liverpool and Man City in terms, because they're what Pep and Jurgen have done is unbelievable. Phenomenal.
Okay, time for the Coral Super Series game. I'm going to ask you both questions on the Tottenham v West Ham game, as well as some Cheltenham races questions. Joe, it was 9-0 last pod. You're 11-10 now, winning.
You've
got your nose in front.
Yep.
Are you going to keep the whip going? All right, so
steady away.
First of all, Tottenham West Ham. Joe, first, who will win the match?
Oh, this is a tough one because I can't back Tottenham, but I can't, but I want to win. Do you know what I mean? And I know West Ham got so many. I'm going to go draw.
I'm going Spurs. I thought he played well against United at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Ronaldo was the difference.
Okay.
And Spurs for me.
First goal scorer?
Harry Kane.
Yeah, spanker, isn't it? How many corners will there be? You actually got this right last
Shut
week.
Shut up.
Can you believe it? How many corners will there be?
What did I say last week?
You said eight.
Let's go eight.
I'm going six.
Bit feisty, this one. How many cards?
Oh.
How many cards will it be in the game?
Five.
I'm going three.
Okay, right, on to Cheltenham. What are the chances of an English trainer winning the Triumph Hurdle?
Joe's got more chance of winning the Triumph Hurdle. Because I think the first four favourites are all trained in Ireland.
Right.
And I cannot see any English horse.
Really?
Or Scottish horse or whatever get past them four that had the betting in the Triumph Hurdle. So no chance.
Wow, okay.
That's massive.
Can Honeysuckle win the champion hurdle by more than she won the Irish champion hurdle, 6.5 lengths?
Yeah, the Irish champion hurdle is a bit weaker race than the champion hurdle. She's some horse. I mean, Rachel Blackmore, she was in Sportsman of the Year last year.
Yes.
She gets on with the filly. She's ran 14 times, won 14 races.
Yeah.
She won the Champion Hurdle last year. No fans there. This year, if she wins the Champion Hurdle, which I think she will, blow the roof off. I don't think it'll be by over 6.5 lengths. I think it'll be under.
And lastly, the big one, who will win the Gold Cup?
Well, I know Joe's been studying this, haven't you, Joe? I like a couple in it. So it's a very open Gold Cup this year. Usually you have a champion, like in the Champion Hurdle, one or...
Yeah.
But I like... It's a Dan Skelton horse called Pritikarat. Pritikarat. Is that how you pronounce it?
Okay. I ain't got a scoop.
Something like that. And, you know, cracking each way price. The horse has won twice at Cheltenham. Loves the track. And a bit more rain, I think he'll run an absolute cracker. And he saved it for the race. He could have gone other races,
really?
But he saved it for the goal.
Okay. I'm going to go with a Ploutard, which in French means a bit late. As we've well documented on this pod, my history, my Derek Trotter level of French. So I'm going to back the French horse there. I don't even know, probably not.
And Rachel
French.
Blackmore rides that, Joe, as well, for an Irish trainer, Henry de Bromhead. That was being Antipope's favourite for most of the year.
Right.
So it got turned over by Galvin ahead in a photo finish.
Right.
But prior to that, won a Haydock and was outstanding. And I was tempted to have a bet on it then. Early in the season to win the Gold Cup. So if that comes back to its form, got a great chance.
Whenever I go Cheltenham, I like me horse racing, but I don't study form, but I love me racing. And I just used to back Ruby Walsh.
Yeah. Willie Mullins, the trainer.
Yeah. And what's he doing now, Ruby?
Ruby's doing TV, he's retired now. But I'll never forgive him because he cost me about $7,000.
Really?
Yeah. Do you remember the meeting when Willie Mullins had a superb first day?
Yeah.
And everyone had had roll-ups and accumulators and doubles, trebles, all going on. Annie Power,
yeah.
What year was this?
Oh, 2016, was it?
We was at Stoke. Yeah, Charlie Adam had it big.
That, if Annie Power would have won, it would have cost the bookmakers over 50 million quid.
That's right.
Because we'd all had the same bet, all doubles and trebles. Coming down the hill,
lost.
20 lengths clear, like that, on the bridle. Coming to the last... Bump fell.
No.
Well, I was on the phone coming down to the last. Oh, my mate, he's not too easy. Like the Del Boy cigar up like that. Yeah, and then it fell. Gee, you'll never forgive Ruby for that.
I remember this, when I had my horse, we had this trainer come. This, I can't even remember his name. I think my horse got an each way happy, but with this fella who's in, and we fed him. Champagne, all my mates are on him, and he's like, the last race, lads, I've got one for the last one. I'm not going to tell you yet. And we're like, oh, the lads are buzzing, the lads are going to the cash point, they're getting all their readies out, this geezer can't miss, he's going, this horse doesn't even need a jockey, just point it out the line, it's won. All my mates have gone bang. A race has gone off, and you're obviously at, you know, last race of the day, everyone's had a few, we're watching it. This horse, I tell you, I don't even think it had four legs, the way it was racing. Like, and he's like that. And as for the realisation, he's got no chance of coming up. But lads, he's off. This geezer. I didn't know his name. Dumb me, man.
He's had two bottles of champagne, though.
Yeah.
He's had two. He had a great one. Gone he was.
Well, there you go.
That was my last chance. That would be last time for the race.
Tips from the experts.
Yep.
Remember,
a Ploutard.
Remember, you can play along at home. Just head over to coral.co.uk. Answer questions correctly to win cash prizes, but please gamble responsibly. Mickey, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for coming on. Enjoy Cheltenham this week.
Yeah, hopefully going to come out to the other side with a few quid.
Good stuff. Well, look, it has been a Cheltenham special. Remember, you can find us on the Joe YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcast from. Before we go, a quick mention for Coral's latest episode of Against the Odds that features the famous racehorse Desert Orchid, telling the inside story of how he defied the odds to become one of the greatest and most popular jump racehorses in history. You can catch that on the ITV Hub now. You have been listening to the All to Play For podcast brought to you by Joe and Coral. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to All to Play For, brought to you by Joe and Coral.